So having understood this, we can now come back to the Buddha's reflections in this second episode. The Buddha sees that there is no one in the universe more accomplished in ethics, meditation, and so on, than himself. He sees quite clearly that he is the highest living being in the universe. One could say that at this point the Buddha discerns the Buddha, and discerns him as the Buddha. So the Buddha is himself the highest living being in the universe. There is no one under whom he could live paying him honour and respect. That surely is clear enough. After all, one lives under someone in this way in order to learn from them. But the Buddha is more highly developed than any other living being. He has nothing to learn, spiritually speaking, from anyone. So there's no point in him living under anyone. But, and this is very important, very significant, but the Buddha even so doesn't give up. The Buddha still wants to live under something, paying it honour and respect. So he reflects still further. He reflects, and again I'm quoting from the scripture, this dharma thing, wherein I am supremely enlightened, what if I were to live under it, paying it honour and respect? And at this point, Brahma Sahampati, Lord of 1,000 worlds, appears. And he approves of the Buddha's decision. And he tells him that all the Buddhas of the past lived only under the Dharma, honouring and respecting it. All the Buddhas of the future will do likewise. Well, we may say, this really is an astonishing passage. It shows that even a Buddha needs, in a sense, needs within single inverted commas perhaps, needs to honour and respect something. Even a Buddha needs to worship something. This suggests that worship is not just a spiritual practice, not just a practice that leads to enlightenment and which can be forgotten after enlightenment has been attained. Worship, or worshipping, it seems, is an integral part of the enlightenment experience itself. We may say, paraphrasing, that the enlightened mind is a worshipping mind no less than it is a loving and compassionate mind. The enlightened mind is a worshipping mind. And therefore, we have to start thinking in terms of a worshipping Buddha. We're familiar, very familiar, with the idea of a meditating Buddha. We're very familiar with the idea of a teaching Buddha. Buddhas of this type are often represented in Buddhist art. We're even familiar with the idea of a walking Buddha, at least some of us are, or a standing Buddha. But we're certainly not familiar with the idea of a worshipping Buddha. This type of Buddha is probably not represented in traditional Buddhist art at all, or at the most represented very rarely indeed. Now, the object of the Buddha's honour and respect, the object of his worship, is the Dharma. And this Dharma, which is the object of the Buddha's worship and respect, cannot be the Dharma in the sense of the Buddha's teaching. In any case, at the time of this particular episode, the Buddha has not as yet taught anything, has not as yet taught anybody. So the Dharma here referred to, the Dharma of which he speaks in this passage, in this episode, must be the Dharma in the sense of law, with a capital L, principle, truth, reality. In other words, the law or principle or truth or reality of which the Dharma as taught, the Dharma as formulated, is an expression in words in accordance with people's needs. It must be the Dharma in the sense of the object or content of the Buddha's own experience of enlightenment. And this is in fact what the Buddha says. As we saw, he says, "This Dharma, wherein I am supremely enlightened, what if I were to live under it, paying it honour and respect?" But here a certain difficulty confronts us. If you worship something, it means that what you worship is higher than you. And here the Buddha worships the Dharma. Therefore the Dharma is higher than the Buddha. But in what sense is the Dharma higher than the Buddha? After all, has the Buddha not realized the Dharma, penetrated the Dharma? Is it not the Dharma itself wherein he is supremely enlightened?